Hi, I'm Dave Bronstetter. This is number 0502, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0502. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actor Chris Browning, who has a recurring role on season 5 of Bosch. He came back to acting after leaving it to get clean and sober.
I had given up the business years ago because I just was having a real hard time staying off of drugs and alcohol. I was on the streets for 6 years and just a down and out heroin addict, or, you know, on the streets or in jail. And so when I finally got out of that life, I got out of L.A. I was willing to just start over somewhere else and just have a quiet little life. And I stopped in Taos, New Mexico, and I moved there. And I said, I'm just, forget the business. I'll build adobe homes or something and not die.
Science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, talks about his new book called Backyard Guide to the Night Sky.
This is something that's been a dream of mine. I've been an amateur astronomer for well over 30 years, a communicator of astronomy for over 20 years professionally. I've been asked so many times, when are you going to write your own backyard guidebook? I mean, I go out with countless people sharing the night sky. It's a passion. I teach courses. I write columns about what you could see in the night sky. And so it's really amazing to be able to finally put all of this knowledge over so many years and pack it into this little volume.
Consultant Paul Hellman, author of You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. It would appear that our attention span is getting shorter.
That 8 seconds, by the way, comes from research that was done by Microsoft, and that, as alarming as it sounds, is the new attention span. And what's really depressing is that goldfish are reputed to have a 9-second attention span. So goldfish are beating us.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0502, was Dave Bronstetter, a retired CBC broadcaster who does a podcast with his former CBC colleague, Yvan Uneau. The podcast is called Grump Pod, as in Grumpy Podcast. Grump Pod. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the show number that Dave just mentioned, and you'll find the link to Grumpod. And thank you very much, Dave, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 37-year-old Jared Randall Womack agreed to exchange pants with another man in Boulder, Colorado on January 22nd. But after the trade, he decided he didn't like the other man's pants after all, so Womack stabbed him in the back. Police investigating the incident later found the pants in question soiled with feces, which, according to the police, quote-unquote, could be the reason for the altercation. You figure? Yeah. Womack was eventually charged with first-degree attempted murder, 2 counts of first-degree assault, and robbery. The stabbing victim sustained life-threatening injuries. Oh, I bet you're now filled with questions, aren't you? Yeah. I know why the victim wanted to trade pants. He apparently had a probation hearing and didn't want to go in with pants that were torn. Never mind soiled. What I'd like to know is why Jared would agree to trading his pants in the first place. And did he really think that stabbing someone was the answer for getting the short end of what was literally a crappy deal? Wow. Talk about being a fashion victim. A Kentucky motel clerk says his manager told him he had demons that were causing his marital problems and would have to undergo a process akin to an exorcism at her church. Jason Fields is suing Hampton Inn and Suites and Sharon Linden, saying that he had to quit after being subjected to religious discrimination and harassment. Fields says Linden provided a packet of invasive questions about his religious beliefs and sex life. One question asked if he belonged to a cult, listing Mormons, native religions, Buddhism, and Islam as examples. Fields says Linden punished him and brought church members to pray for him in the lobby when he didn't turn in the form. Hampton Inn's statement says they oppose discrimination and will investigate.
Friendly service. Real value from your friends at Hampton.
Yes, how long do you think Sharon is going to keep her job? She better pray on it. Passengers on a Melbourne, Australia commuter train dove under seats, cried, and texted their loved ones on March 28th when police locked down the Flagstaff station in response to a report of a man with a rifle case acting suspiciously. As it turned out, Will Austin, a busker aboard the train, was performing breathing exercises in advance of playing his didgeridoo, an indigenous wind instrument that Austin was carrying in a long bag. Oblivious to police wearing body armor and carrying assault rifles, Austin admitted, "I probably look pretty suspicious, I suppose, just waltzing around and slowly walking out." This was before officers stopped him to search his bag. There was nothing to see here. Anyway, I'm guessing he didn't make a lot of money busking that day unless people handed over dollars because of an overwhelming sense of overreaction guilt. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Florida police officer is under fire after starting an affair with a woman online. Officer Kevin Thompson of Lady Lake resigned after pictures surfaced showing him enjoying the pleasure of his own company in his patrol car while he was in uniform. Thompson, who is married, responded to the personal ad of a 38-year-old woman about 4 months ago, and the two began meeting while the officer was on duty. Thompson allegedly put out false patrol alerts so that he could hang out with the woman while on duty. During one of the visits, the woman came to his patrol car and saw the officer pleasuring himself while holding a pair of her underwear. She told police that she took about 15 photos of the officer's actions. That was his big mistake. Never let your girlfriend take photos of you while you're wearing her panties and shaking hands with Dr. Winky. Even civilians know that one. The woman told deputies that she did not know that Thompson was married when the affair began. When she learned that he had a wife, the officer promised to leave his wife and live with her. That did not happen. After he tried to break up with her, the woman told officers that she threatened to tell Thompson's wife about the affair and to show her pictures of him playing five-on-one in his car. Thompson then sent her threatening text messages saying that if she did so, he will see to it that her daughters will be taken away from her and she will be arrested for threatening a police officer. Thompson resigned the day after the allegations were made public. Well, hey, when you're in your police car, you know, liquidating the inventory, you've literally done yourself in. Besides owing Onin residuals, you're out of a job basically by your own hand. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The fifth season of Bosch will soon be released on Amazon and here in Canada on Crave. Actor Chris Browning is on the show in season 5, playing Preston Borders, an accused murderer that Bosch helped send to prison years ago, who hires an attorney to help him get a new trial. Chris joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So how did this role in Bosch come your way?
You know, it's I'd love to say that it was through some producers who loved my work, or, you know, someone pulled some strings and said, we got to have Chris Browning. But it was just a routine audition.
And you've been at this for a while. So how do you enjoy, if at all, the audition process?
I hate it. I suck at it. And I'm sure I've cost myself scores of jobs because what I do in the audition room and what ends up on screen are vastly different.
Wow. So, you know, there are a lot of aspiring actors out there who are hearing this and thinking, well, if Chris Browning doesn't have a chance, what chance do I have?
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, there's I know a lot of people that want to, you know, that know they're not good auditioners. I mean, you know, I have a theory that being a good auditioner is, you know, I mean, it's a totally different skill set, because if you're a good actor, that means you're listening and you're reacting to what's coming your way. And you know, in an audition situation, that's just not the case. The person reading with you gives you nothing. They just read the lines like they're just reading it off a script, and they don't put anything into it. So you have to imagine, you know, somebody's heated or sad or crying or whatever, because, you know, if the scene calls for somebody to be hysterically crying and saying, I don't know what I'm going to do without you, Jake, you know, you have to pretend that that's what you're getting, because you're really getting, I don't know what I'll do without you, Jake, you know, you know, if you react honestly to that, you're not going to end up with much of a performance. So, you know what I mean? It's just not, it doesn't have anything to do with acting.
Okay, so let's get to your character of Preston Borders. In doing this role, do you know the full story arc? And I'm not asking that question so you'll give stuff away, because I know you can't. But do you know your whole story arc?
I do. You know, the book series is Michael Connelly has written 26 books with the Harry Bosch character. And what they do is they decide, we're going to use this book for season 2 and this book for season 4 and, you know, whatever. And this particular season is based on a book called Two Kinds of Truth. And that's the one that Preston Borders is the main thorn in Harry Bosch's side for that season. And so I have yet to read the book. I'm just not a big reader, and I already had the job before, you know, without reading the book, because it's just, like I said, it's an audition. The pages come in, you learn them, you go in and you do it, you know, and you don't have time to read a book. So I mean, it's, you know, the book's out there, so that I can probably give away more than I could if it weren't based on a book, because there's plenty of fans out there that know how this plays out. I won't give that away, but you know, for those who don't know. But yeah, Preston Borders was put in prison 25 years ago. Harry Bosch arrested him for murdering a girl, and Preston was a rock and roll guy. He was a Sunset Strip, leather pants, long hair, tons of jewelry, and, you know, looked like, you know, Jim Morrison or some, you know, Steven Tyler. And he was just an arrogant guy. He's just one of those, you know, you got nothing on me, you're wasting my time kind of guys. But Bosch did put him away. But now you know, here it is 25 years later, this guy's been on death row for 25 years. And some new evidence has shown up, some new DNA evidence, which was not a big deal back in the 90s. But some evidence turned up in my sealed evidence box. And someone else has confessed to the crime on his deathbed. So I've got this lawyer, and the plan is to sue the city, you know, to get a new trial, get set free, sue the city for a fortune, and you know, get a new life. And people are wondering, did Bosch, you know, plant evidence on this guy? Did he railroad him? You know, people are starting to look like, what really happened here? So people are kind of looking at Harry for, you know, suspiciously.
The reason why I asked the question is, and the way I asked it is because you've played a range of characters through your course of your career, and you've also played quite a few bad guys. And I'm just and one has to know their motivation going in order to play the role. And the reason why I asked how much of your story arc did you know was, does it affect the way you play a character? For instance, this particular character, is he truly innocent? Does he believe he's innocent, or is he gaming the system? And as an actor, do you need to know that to play him?
Oh yeah, of course. And you know, they were even protective with me on how much I could know. They just really don't want stuff because they don't stick directly to the book, you know, and they change things around sometimes, but that was one thing. I was like, guys, did I do this? You know, is this, cause that's hugely important. I need to know that, of course. Because there's a lot of scenes, that aren't with Bosch, that, you know, scenes with my lawyer and, you know, things like that, where you're going to see who this guy really is. He's married. He got into a relationship with a court stenographer, and you know, years and years ago, and he's been married to this girl, and you know, so you need to know, like, what does she know, and what did I do, you know, did I do this, or you know, is Bosch? So you know, they're of course going to give me that information, but you know, the reason I got into playing so many bad guys is because I had given up the business years ago because I just was having a real hard time staying off of drugs and alcohol. And I kind of just, when I finally did get my life together, and I was on the streets for 6 years and just a down and out heroin addict or, you know, on the streets or in jail for years. And so when I finally got out of that life, I got out of LA and I was willing to just start over somewhere else and just have a quiet little life. And I stopped in Taos, New Mexico, and I moved there and I said, I'm just, forget the business. I'll build adobe homes or something and not die. And so that was the goal. And that just happened. That was in 2004. And that happened to be the year that New Mexico started a tax incentive to bring productions to the state. So they pulled me back in.
So you were literally at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I had to be willing to give it up in order to get it. And so the bad guy roles are what's available. Like a production will come to the state, like Book of Eli, and you know, they have their heroes or their star villain, you know, which was Gary Oldman, and they had their Denzel and they had all their leads. So everybody else in the movie is pretty much going to be a bad guy, you know? And that's how I got those bad guy roles, is by living in New Mexico and hiring on locally as a local bad guy.
Was it easy for you? Was it easy for you to jump back in after that hiatus and getting your life back in shape?
Oh yeah, it was incredibly easy because I didn't have any secrets. You know, I wasn't worried about people, you know, seeing in my eyes that I was on something or smelling something on my breath, or you know what I mean. It's very freeing to be able to just look people in the eye and go, like me or not, this is the real me. You know. And my work was a lot better because I had a confidence in you know, not having a secret, you know.
Are there certain roles that you'd love to play that you haven't had the chance to and would like to?
Yeah, I mean I get to play good guys once in a while. I recur on a show called The 100. Where I play the lead girl's father, Eliza. I play her dad, but again, I'm already dead on that show. And every time you see me, it's a flashback. But he's a husband and a father and a scientist, and you know, and a good guy. Jake's a good guy, and I like playing those roles. So you know, this year I've kind of, and I'd like to do more comedy, but, you know, I've cut my hair to a reasonable length, and I have a short beard going, but the kind of a beard that you can wear a suit with. You know, I'd like to dress up more rather than put on, you know, leather clothes and have a knife in my hand all the time. Mm-hmm. You know,
well,
I can do that.
Congratulations on your part in Bosch, and more importantly, congratulations on turning your life around, because that's a very important issue, of course. And I'm glad to see that things are working out for you. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor.
Actor Chris Browning, who is on the fifth season of Bosch, which you can find on Amazon and also here in Canada on Crave. Check your local listings. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File Program, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy, about his new book, Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. We'll also touch base with Paul Hellman, author of You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. There's an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on the Stuff File Program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. And now, right to the stuff. Or at least back to the stuff. More stuff is what I'm trying to say. Bystanders at Moscow's airport got an unexpected show on March 23rd when an unnamed man made his way through Ural Airlines flight registration, then suddenly stripped off all his clothes and ran onto the jet bridge. A fellow passenger said he shouted that he was naked because clothing impairs the aerodynamics of the body. He flies with more agility when undressed. Okay. The nude man, who hails from Yakutsk but lives near Moscow, was intercepted by airport staff before he made it to the plane and was turned over to police and then moved to a hospital. Witnesses say he did not appear to be drunk. Naked to be more aerodynamic on a flight. Is he aware of the fact that the plane does the flying and not him? Yeah. Time for a checkup from the neck up. Anyway, authorities say a Florida man did not want to show up for his shift at a Hardee's restaurant, so he called 911 and reported that he had been robbed. 32-year-old Brian Anderson of Dundee told dispatchers that two gun-carrying men took his necklace, money, and his phone before jumping into a car and driving away. Who does this guy think he is? Jesse Smollett? Anyway, Polk County Sheriff's deputies went to the scene and quickly realized that a robbery never happened. In a Facebook post, the agency said Anderson confessed, adding that, on the bright side, Brian didn't have to go to his 11 a.m. shift at the restaurant. Anderson is charged with misusing the 911 system and knowingly giving false information to law enforcement. I also get the feeling his job won't be waiting for him when he gets out. 21-year-old Alicia Johnson apparently needed some alone time on March the 9th, so she took a full cart and a six-pack of Stella Artois beer into a dressing room at Target in Lathrop, California, where she hunkered down for more than an hour. Johnson finished all the beer and left the store with about $200 worth of unpurchased merchandise. A loss prevention officer stopped her, and she was taken to the San Joaquin County Jail, where she was held on $60,000 bail. Johnson also had 3 outstanding warrants. Wow. Drinking for an hour in a Target store changing room, or should we say Target? You know, some bars and nightclubs often have a lot of mirrors, but they're usually not this small. Yeah. A fight about donuts escalated when a Krispy Kreme worker stabbed his co-worker's boyfriend. 32-year-old Julius Irving, no, not that one, was arguing with his co-worker, Olivia Zavalza, over how she was making donuts. Zavalza called her boyfriend to come pick her up, and when he arrived, he got into an argument with Irving. Irving pulled out a knife that was 4 to 6 inches long and stabbed the victim 4 times. The man fought off Irving before collapsing in front of the store. Officers treated the victim at the scene before he was taken to hospital. Gainesville police officers found Irving by the donut shop and arrested him. He was charged with attempted homicide and booked into the county jail. You know, I'm kind of torn on deciding between whether this guy perhaps drinks too much coffee on the job or has too much pride in his work.
Time to make the donut.
The secrets of the perfect donut. Knead and roll, knead and roll.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an Austintown, Ohio man pulled over for a traffic stop was caught with cocaine in his sock before telling police, "These aren't my socks." 20-year-old Damian K. Clark Jr. was pulled over at just before 4:30 a.m. Saturday after allegedly failing to use his right turn signal. The officer said he smelled raw marijuana coming from inside the vehicle. Loose raw marijuana was found on the floorboard. During a search, officers found a small plastic bag of suspected cocaine inside his left sock. That's when Clark then said, "These aren't my socks." After Clark was taken into custody, police found alprazolam in the front of his pants along with a white powder substance in a torn plastic bag in his front shirt. Police said he asked officers to throw away the evidence, claiming, "Someone gave me the pills to hold. We were at a party." Loose marijuana was also found on the back of his shirt. When Clark arrived at the County Justice Center, police seized $750 found on him, along with a cell phone. They also found a pill in his left sock. Clark said he forgot that that was there. Clark now faces charges for conveying drugs and drug abuse. You know, if your answer to finding drugs in the socks that you are wearing is that these aren't my socks, then you have the same spatial intelligence as a toddler who is still mystified by object permanence when playing peekaboo. Yeesh. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy, is back on the show. That's because he has a new book out that is just hot off the presses. It's a National Geographic tome called Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter. Great to be here.
Great to have you back on the program as usual, sir, and great to be able to talk about your latest book. Tell us all about it.
Well, this is really something that's been a dream of mine. I've been an amateur astronomer for well over 30 years, a communicator of astronomy for over 20 years professionally. And, you know, I've been asked so many times, when are you going to write your own backyard guidebook? I mean, I go out with countless people sharing the night sky. It's a passion. And I teach courses in the night sky. I write columns about what you can see in the night sky. And so it's really amazing to be able to finally put all of this knowledge over so many years and pack it into this little volume and share some of those nuggets of and tips and tricks of how to go about getting involved in the night sky and kind of getting a recipe for success. And also getting people motivated to continue exploring the night sky. And a lot of people, what I can't stand, Peter, is when, you know, I feel so sorry about this, is when people get a telescope for Christmas, or maybe it's a retirement gift or whatever, and they look, take a look at the moon when they get their new telescope out of the box, maybe a star or two, and then it just gets relegated to the closet and dusts away, you know? And it's a shame, because there's so much to see. There's so many interesting, a lifetime of enjoyment with the night sky if you just know how to go about doing it. And that's what I've kind of put together in this guy. I wish I could be with everybody, hold their hand and point things out in the sky by their side. I can't do that with everyone. But with this book, you do have the night sky guy with you, guiding your way, exploring the sky.
So exactly how does one use your book, Backyard Guide to the Night Sky?
Well, first off, I give an introduction about the universe, really giving people a sense of their place in the cosmos. It's one of the things I noticed over the years of teaching and just chatting with regular folks at star parties is really that there's this understandable confusion of where we are in the universe, and a lot of the terminology that's used in astronomy can be confusing. And what's the difference between a galaxy and a solar system, and how is the solar system or planets like the Earth, how is that all related to everything else in the universe? And so in my book, I really begin the whole voyage in the sense of just establishing that our place in the cosmos, and getting people to understand of the distances that are involved, and the movement of the sky. How does it change from day to day, month to month, season to season? These are really basic foundations to understanding, why is the night sky look the way they do? And it really has to do with our perspective as a sky watcher who is standing on this third planet from the sun. It really, that sense of perspective is very important to understand. And that's what I lay the foundation at the beginning of the book. And then I go into understanding the tools of the trade. You know, you don't really need a telescope or binoculars to begin exploring the sky. The human eye is a really perfect, it's nature's perfect lens that's adapted to looking at the sky in large areas of real estate, sky real estate. And then, of course, you want to begin later when you understand the sky a little bit, getting binoculars out and telescopes. I go into how to choose telescopes and binoculars, what to look for when you're choosing them, how, some interesting new technological developments when it comes to a lot of these instruments, I cover those. And then even giving tips and tricks on how to involve family members, youngsters in it, making it a family activity, giving ideas for parents on how to get kids excited about the night sky. Then I go into some of the background science regarding all those objects that you see in the sky, those points of light. What are they? Some of the most fascinating things about the hobby that really get people excited is just understanding what those lights are, is the background. Like, my gosh, that's like a monster star that's 500 light years away. Or, my gosh, that's a factory where stars are born. What is a shooting star? It's not even a star at all. It's actually a small space rock traveling at 200,000 kilometers per hour in our atmosphere, burning up. These kind of facts are really what makes stargazing so fascinating and really engaging for all ages. So I go into all of that. And then, of course, the heart of the book, Peter, are those star charts, maps of the sky. And I've made sure that those maps are geared for beginners to understand, people who are relegated to cities. Most of the world's population are found, we live in within city limits where there's a lot of light pollution. But You can do a lot of really cool stargazing, even if you live in within city limits. And I go into the maps showing people how to hop, do what's called star hopping from one place to the next in the sky. And then I go into all the constellations and the mythology and some of my favorite objects that people should really hunt down when they're looking with their eye or binoculars. And so it's really a complete guide for anyone who's a beginner, anyone who may want to take the next step in astronomy and wants some ideas, or is maybe wants to pack a guidebook when they're traveling out to the country cottage, or maybe going out on an adventure trip to some far off destination.
Okay,
this
so
is the book to take.
So this is your second book.
It is.
You are a man of science. Your first book was about Star Trek, but again, that was also a book of science because it had star charts beyond the galaxy. To bring it down to Earth, to bring it down to our level, literally, would it be fair to say that your first book took a look at, say, was like a guidebook to our city, and this book is a guidebook to our neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, it really does drill down. This book really, the second book that I hear, is really drills down to the nitty-gritty about stargazing and the night sky. Star Trek, the first book that I had, I've cherry-picked things in the sky that relate to this really popular science fiction show. And that it really is something that people who are involved in the science fiction show, anyone who's a big fan of it, can really relate to, or people who may not be as much of a fan of the show but know about stargazing can take a very unique new approach to their hobby. So it was, I like to call it, my Star Trek book is the ultimate mind meld for space nerds, because it really does meld hardcore science facts with a wonderful science fiction show that is really based on science to begin with. That's what Star Trek is so wonderful at. And this second book now, you're right, we're going down into the neighborhood, into the nitty-gritty, looking at the, if it was a, we're talking a neighborhood analogy, looking at the buildings, looking at the apartments and the individual houses and the bedrooms, and those would be the stars and the planets and the meteors and the comets, really drilling down to nitty-gritty of the night sky. And that's why this book is for really the large masses of people. So if you really want to get into the hobby of astronomy, it's something like this that can really start you on your journey.
To use another real estate analogy, this book is like going to those Sunday open houses.
Exactly. And having fun and getting interior decorating ideas.
Now,
right?
you mentioned a few moments ago some of your favorite objects are within this book. At least you picked out some of your favorite objects. We have just about a minute. What are some of your favorite objects in the night sky?
My goodness. I think one of my most... Okay, I'll have to do two. One is planets, particularly Jupiter. I just absolutely love looking at Jupiter through... binoculars, you can see the moons of Jupiter if you hold them steady enough. With a small telescope, it really begins to reveal itself as a world. So you see the cloud belts, the storms on this planet that rage for months and years that are bigger than our entire planet Earth. You see all of those details on Jupiter. It's a fascinating world that I can spend hours looking at that. Never gets old. And then moving outside of the solar system, a star factory like the Orion Nebula that sits 1,300 light years away, it means we're seeing what it looked like 1,300 years ago, and it looks like a blossoming flower, and it's actually this gigantic cloud of dust and gas that really holds court to over 40 young baby stars that are just being born, and you get a glimpse of what perhaps where the solar nest of where the sun how it began, its life 5 billion years ago may have been like. So these are amazing objects that are just visible from the backyard anywhere around the world.
Again, the book is Backyard Guide to the Night Sky, written by Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy. I thank you once again, sir, for being on the program with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, as usual. And if people would like to find out more about my book, I invite them to visit my website, thenightskyguide.com, where I have links to where to purchase the book and getting lots of other interesting things about the sky in general.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy, and author of Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0502, and you'll find links to his site and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. People who have heard about our annual Wacky Warning Labels contest often ask us if there are certain kinds of labels we don't accept for our contest, even if they are funny. That's a really good question, and the answer is yes. There are many hilarious warnings that aren't necessarily common sense, so they're needed for consumer safety reasons. I'd like to tell you about one funny label we haven't used, and why. The warning comes on packaging for a pain reliever called PMS Mitol. Obviously, it's for women, but it warns, do not use if you have an enlarged prostate. Now let's be fair, you don't need to be a doctor to know that someone with PMS is not going to have a prostate. Kids, trust me. But the side effects of this medicine are not common knowledge, and there may be a man somewhere with a headache so bad he's willing to use PMS Mitol, so that warning needs to be there. If you have a funny, common sense warning that would be good for our contest, send it to us. Find out how you could be the next $1,000 grand prize winner at centerforamericatv.org.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. An unidentified woman filed a complaint with the Polk County, Florida Sheriff's Office, alleging that 59-year-old Maurice Campbell had been harassing her on the phone. Accusing the woman of having an intimate relationship with her husband, Campbell allegedly called multiple times during the day until the woman turned off her phone for the night. The next morning, she found 3 voicemails filled with profanities and threats. This is not proper behavior for anyone, said Sheriff Grady Judd, let alone an elected official. Campbell, the vice mayor of Fort Meade, was arrested. She had concluded one of her voicemails by saying, "This is Maurice Campbell, and I approve that bleeping message, and you can believe that." And you can also guess what the bleep was. Yeah, well, we'll just have to wait and see later if the voters approve. Although, in this day and age, I'm not so sure the outcome is a slam dunk so many of us would traditionally expect. I'll say one thing, she definitely put the vice in vice mayor. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? When you talk, do others really pay attention? According to communication expert Paul Hellman, probably not. Whether you're presenting to a large audience, meeting one-on-one, talking on the phone, or even sending an email, people's attention spans have almost vanished. Paul is the author of You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. He joins us on the line from Boston. Hi, Paul.
Well, it's great to be here.
Thanks for being on the program. You've got 8 seconds. No, seriously.
And that's about right. That 8 seconds, by the way, comes from research that was done by Microsoft, and that, as alarming as it sounds, is the new attention span. And what's really depressing is that goldfish are reputed to have a 9-second attention span. So goldfish are beating us.
Ouch. Okay, so is it really the dropping of an attention span, or is it really a lack of communication skills that we seem to be losing over time, or a combination of both?
I suspect it's a combination of both, and I think most people understand the reasons, and a lot of it just has to do with technology and the fact that we're all carrying smartphones and we're just so easily distracted. And then, of course, we're in the information age, and the information age means that you are just every single day flooded, inundated with more information than you can possibly absorb. So there are a lot of things going on.
Now, besides attention span, is it just our, for lack of a better term, our sense of manners these days? For instance, I would assume that when it comes to sales, attention span is very important. Now, I'm old enough to remember back in the day when door-to-door salesmen would actually show up, knock on your door, and try to sell their wares. And you'd open your door and you would listen to them for at least a moment before you said either yay or nay. Nowadays, for instance, I find that people, myself included, get very perturbed when someone calls me on the phone. I don't even have to answer my door anymore. Sometimes when a telemarketer calls, I'll pick up the phone and they'll try to sell me something, and I won't even say anything. I'll just hang up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's just it's a great set of images that you're serving up here, because I do think that again, given how flooded everybody is with information and how narrow our attention spans have become, that almost any time anybody says anything, whether it's by phone or email, it's as if they're the door-to-door salesperson from way back when. And it feels like, it can feel almost like an intrusion, unless I think you really have some good communication skills. And it's not that complicated, but it does require some intention to be skillful. In the way that a good salesperson needs to be skillful.
Okay, so...
And in some ways, it's very similar.
Okay, so how do you get past the 8 seconds that you talk about in your book? How do you communicate with people in a world today with a shortening attention span?
The first thing that you do, and this is a really, really important thing, and it's in a way, it's a key principle, and the principle... in three words, is be the audience. Be the audience means to put yourself in the place, even if it's just in your imagination for about 30 seconds. Just imagine that you're the one who's going to be receiving this email or this phone call or this conversation. And the first question, of course, if you do this and be the audience, the first question is, well, why am I listening to you? What do you have to say that's going to have any value or benefit to me? And that's an interesting question to pose before you send your next email or go into your manager's office and debrief her or ask her something. Why should she listen, given that there are so many competing priorities, really, that are vying for her attention? So we have to treat, the easy way to think about this is that the more information there is, the less people's attention.
It also sounds like you have to have a fine line between a strong sense of self-confidence and an overinflated ego, because you have to be in a situation where you assume people want to hear what you have to say, first of all.
Well, in a way... yeah, it's partially. It does require, I think, some confidence, but that's a whole other conversation we could have, because you don't necessarily have to feel confident to look confident. You don't have to feel confident to act confident. This comes as a big surprise for people. I do a fair amount of work with executives and with leadership teams who have to put out some kind of a message. It could be a presentation, or it could be some kind of a company-wide update or something. And a lot of times people think that they have to first feel something in order to act that way. But actually, it's the exact opposite. If you act confident, you know, if you're giving a presentation, for example, you don't need to feel confident to stand up straight. You don't need to feel confident to have good eye contact, and you don't need to feel confident to speak with volume so that everybody in the room can hear you. Those things are actions, and this comes as good news to a lot of people.
Now, your book is called You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. When you wrote this book, who did you look at as your prime audience? Who were you trying to reach?
Well, it's the audience that I work with day in and day out, which are primarily business executives and business professionals. I've been a consultant for some 30 years, and I consult and speak really internationally and often at very, very large companies. So the book draws, I appreciate you asking the question, because the book is drawing from that experience. So it's not really theory. It's tested techniques that I use when I'm working with people, because when I'm working with people, it's always about how can we do something that's going to make you even more skillful than you might have been before.
I would assume that you have a more difficult road to hoe in putting a book like this together, just based on the job you have to do. I'm sure you're not unaware of the fact that in particular companies, when everyone says, everyone stop what you're doing, let's gather around, we have a consultant who's going to speak to us, you know there's a certain amount of eye rolling going around going, oh, why did I not call in sick today, you know, kind of thing. So how do you get past that when it's your job to get past that?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, because I'm the guy that comes in and says all these things about attention is such a scarce thing, and you've got 8 seconds, right? So I've got to model that. And here's one thing that anybody listening can do. For example, if you were making a presentation, is to take this idea of you've got 8 seconds, particularly in a presentation, very, very seriously. And what I mean by that is, when people open a presentation, they frequently say the same old stuff. So thank you all for being here. And then they go into a biography that's a little bit too long. And the first 30 seconds is kind of blown. But if you do something in the first few seconds, even before saying thank you, and even before saying your name and introducing yourself, if you do something in the first few seconds that grabs people's attention, then you're off to a really strong, fast start. So I'll give you a quick example. I was working with somebody, a woman on a presentation. She was talking about the Chinese stock market, which at the time had been falling. And so I said, well, how are you going to open this? And of course, she had a PowerPoint deck. And her first slide was the title slide called the Chinese stock market. So that's just a very, very, very typical opening that's not going to grab anybody's attention. So I said, well, why don't you try this? Stand up in front of the room. Don't say anything. Have a water bottle or an empty cup or something like that, but you're holding this thing. And you look at the audience, and then you say, looking at whatever you're holding, this cup or water bottle, you say, this is the Chinese stock market. And then you let go, and the thing falls to the ground, and it makes a sound. And you say, that's what's been happening. And then you go into, I'm here today to talk about, and you say something that indicates that what you're going to talk about is going to have value for your audience. So in those first few seconds, what you've done is not only have you captured everybody's attention, but you've also said, I know what I'm doing up here. And you don't need any confidence, believe it or not, to do that, because that's just an action. It's just a behavior.
Well, you certainly grabbed our attention. The book is called You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. Paul, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here. Can I also say I write very, very fast tips, and CNBC actually has published over 100 of these. And if somebody goes to my website, which is expresspotential.com, they can sign up and try these things.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Paul.
Pleasure being with you.
Communication expert Paul Hellman. His book is You've Got 8 Seconds, Communication Secrets for a Distracted World. As you heard Paul mention, he has some excellent tips that you can use that you'll find on his website at expresspotential.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0205, and you'll find links to Paul's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
To pay off a $2,000 gambling debt, Constantine Zathalis agreed to transport something from Montreal to Calgary. That's a 2,500-mile road trip, by the way. And while he was on the way, he was to pick up 2 passengers in Toronto and take them to Calgary, too. Constantine picked up Serge, Alan, and a woman, and Alan was very helpful. He used navigation on his iPhone to find the shortest route. That took them over the Blue Water Bridge into Port Huron, Michigan, across the border. U.S. Customs and Border Protection referred the trio to a secondary inspection because none of them had proof of citizenship, and that's when customs officials found what the something was, a green reusable grocery bag containing approximately 10 pounds of methamphetamine in tablet form. According to the resulting criminal charges, Zathalis and Allen have been charged with drug trafficking. The woman was not charged. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're transporting a package that you don't know what's in it, and you've been given this task to pay off a gambling debt, would you cross the border from Canada into the U.S. as a shortcut to get to Calgary to save time, especially when you don't have a passport with you? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0502. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0502. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.